Number 95, Town of Islip. Okay, Counselor, go ahead.
Thank you, Your Honor. My name is Ernest Stolzer. I am the attorney for the petitioner appellant Town of Islip. I believe I have 12 minutes, yeah. And I'd ask for three. For
three, sure. Go ahead, Counselor.
Thanks a lot.
You're on.
In this case, if the court affirms PURB's and the appellate division's decisions, it would be improperly preventing the town from enforcing its
law. Why isn't this a deference case? Why shouldn't we defer it to the agency here?
Why should you not?
Yeah.
Well, this
What makes it not a case to just say their own deference expertise and let it go from there?
Because in this case, we have something unusual. There are
What's unusual?
What's unusual is the local law 14-12.
But the town ignored it for 18, 20 years, didn't they?
Excuse me?
The town ignored it for 18 to
yes,
20
it did.
Years, didn't they? Somehow
and
80.
Improperly,
am I correct said. Reading the record that 80 town employees had vehicles? Had town vehicles?
80 town employees had vehicles.
Why aren't you stuck with your own interpretation or your own actions in relation to the local law? You seem to think it was perfectly appropriate, as Judge Grappio just said, in 80 employees. This isn't just an isolated incident where the town law was not followed, at least from your view. Why shouldn't we say that was your interpretation, and now at the point that you want to renegotiate it, what gives you the right at this point to just, you know, ignore all those years of allowing this situation?
Well, first of all, I wouldn't agree that it was appropriate. I think it was inappropriate. There was a period of time this
Yes, but you're the one who determined it was appropriate in terms of the law. In other words, that's the way the town interpreted its own law.
Well, that's
You're saying wrongly so, and so we just forget about it?
Well, I'm not saying forget about it. It happened. It needed to be corrected.
And you can, on a dime, say, gee, that may be 80 people, maybe all these years.
I wouldn't say on a dime since we're 6 years into the litigation.
Yeah, actually, I would have to say I don't even understand it. I don't even understand the provision. To me, it's very ambiguous and murky. I mean, I particularly this piece, what's this exception, except when such services are available to the public generally?
Well, the situation is this. The town was providing the cars. I think the crucial language here is permit the use of town-owned vehicles for personal convenience.
And you didn't provide them for personal convenience or profit?
Well, that's not what the union said.
Okay.
What the union said at the hearing was, and I'll quote from page 56.
Is this a question of whether or not you consider commuting back and forth to work to be personal convenience or profit? I mean, what was it? If I was one of the 80 people and I had the town car, or I had a car provided by the town, I could commute back and forth to work. Could I then take it out to buy groceries, or could I stop and buy groceries on my way home from work to home? I mean, would that be considered, would that be okay?
I don't believe it's even okay to commute back and
But isn't it kind of contradictory in nature? I think that's what the judge is saying.
But
the
I don't
rule
think we have
is, really, the law is hard to decipher what's personal, what's not. And then, again, I bring up my point, and because it is murky and it is ambiguous, you obviously interpreted it in a certain way. Why aren't you just stuck with that?
But it's not murky in this particular case because the charging party, the union, conceded that these vehicles were used for personal business. It's
well,
on
the administrative manual says that it's for employees that are on 24-hour call. Were all of these 80 employees, did they all have jobs that they were on call?
No.
24 hours a day?
No.
You know, that's very
Nicole, is it your position that the town misinterpreted its law all those years, or that it just ignored it?
I don't know what was in.
And does it make it?
No, I wasn't making the decision, Your Honor.
I mean, I guess does it make a difference?
Advising.
Does it make a difference whether this was allowing this vehicle use was something arguably legal, maybe PURB found it was legal, then maybe we have to defer. But if this thing was clearly illegal, then can PERB say that an illegal custom has become binding?
Well, I think in this...
You should be able to answer that last one. That's one of Judge Pickett's softballs.
The answer to that's no. But I, as I said, to me, it's very murky. I mean, it's very ambiguous. And so that goes back to Judge Smith's first alternative. I mean, it was an ambiguous law, and maybe you misinterpreted, or you interpreted one way, you could have interpreted another way, and then aren't you stuck then?
Let me follow up on that. I guess what I'm saying is I think it's the same thing that the judge is saying. If you have a local law, and let's say it's subject to different interpretations, and the administration interprets it a certain way for 20 years, and then a new administration comes in and say, you know what, I don't read it that way. You know, we think it's the opposite. Can the town benefit that? A new person comes in and says illegal, and then they say, oh, yeah, it's really illegal. It's really, you know, we couldn't do that. Isn't that an odd way that government should work? And I think that was the thrust also of Judge Smith's question. Is it that they ignored the law, or is it that over those 20 years, whether it's ambiguous, murky, whatever it is, there was one view of it, a new group comes in and says, oh, that's not really our view, and can government really run that way?
Well, I think government...
Especially when you're negotiating with employees, and there's got to be some element of fairness in relation to how you deal with them.
Well, government can correct its mistakes. And I think it has an obligation.
Misinterpretation or ignoring, in answer to Judge Smith's question?
I would say it was a misinterpretation.
But how can that be if the town was deducting money from the paychecks? Why would you then compound that by actually taking money from their paychecks to offset the benefit?
Oh, I'm not defending that. It was compounded. That doesn't make it any better.
Well, whether
it's still
it was,
an improper use of those vehicles to allow these people who are not 24
No, but what I'm saying isn't the point that there's a deduction from the paycheck an indication that it was the interpretation of the town, that indeed they could allow these particular individuals to use these cars for purposes of commuting to and from work?
The town at that point, yes. I mean, I can't had this record of it. I'm not saying they didn't know.
Okay, Counsel,
they were incorrect.
Counsel, whether it was ignorance, you ignored the law, or you misinterpreted the law, either way, can the town, isn't the question really, can the town just decide it's not going to make it a matter of negotiation, that they can take that off the table? And isn't that really what we're dealing with here? Whatever the reasons that you believe that the law was improperly applied, shouldn't that be a part of the negotiations, not just the town saying, well, now we're going to do something different? That's what we really have to decide here.
I agree. And I don't think the town has an obligation to be negotiating with the union about the legal issue.
Well, suppose the town for 20, 50, a million years interpreted this law in a particular way, and suppose they were wrong. Suppose a court decides they were wrong. The law doesn't mean what they thought it said. It's perfectly plain. It means you don't get cars unless you're on call 24/7. On that assumption, does PERB have the authority to order the town to keep providing the cars?
My answer would be no.
I'm surprised a little bit how much you're giving up. When I read the statute and read the, you know, it said if you're 24/7, if you're this, if you're that, and the testimony was so thin at this hearing. But of course, you labor lawyers know what you're doing, and we diligence don't. But they said you get it, you know, if your job entails it, you get this, and you can take it home. But we're going to charge you for that, and you need your supervisor's approval. Now, if the violation is that the supervisor wasn't signing off or something, I get that. That wasn't in the record. But what's wrong with saying, for your convenience, because you drive this, you know, you're going to go out and the appraisers, I guess the real estate guys get these things. And so you can leave from your house and go to wherever you have to do the next assessment or whatever. You just have to pay us what we think is fair market value of you having driven the car back and forth to home. But you can't have a Mary Kay sticker in the back window. You can't use it for any personal reason. And I thought that's what the town was doing, but they're not. You're saying they didn't. They violated their own statute.
They violated their own statute, then they changed it because they were allowing people to commute, use the vehicles to commute back and forth from home when it had no benefit to the town or the operation.
So what precipitated the change in the policy? Did the electorate finally realize it was footing the bill for 80 cars? Or,
you had a change in supervisors.
Is it a budget situation? Is that what precipitated the change?
Well, you had a change in supervisors, and they re-looked at the statute. And part of it was to save money. You have the public paying their monies, their taxes, for these employees to commute to and from
home. So it has no effect.
It had no benefit to the town.
Even assuming that it was an obvious violation of the statute for all those years, again, you can just say at some point, you know what, this is costing too much money. We're not going to violate the statute anymore. That's basically what happened in your view, right?
They are not going to violate the statute.
You said they should never have violated it in the first place.
Well, that would have been the better option.
Well, suppose, for example, the opinion came from the county attorney that this is an unconstitutional gift of public funds. You're taking money that belongs to the taxpayers and you're giving it to personal people, and that's unconstitutional in the state of New York. I mean, wouldn't that end it? I mean, you can't negotiate that, can you?
I don't believe you can.
You didn't make that argument that I know.
But it has to be an unconstitutional gift to public funds. In this case, it was a violation of their local law. And I think you're correct, Your Honor. I gave up on that too easily. I don't think that this statute is as murky as we're discussing it here. It was a use of a town-owned vehicle for personal convenience. Even the union said that it was, that there was no question in this proceeding, in this particular circumstance, that the vehicles were used for personal business. Those individuals who had the vehicles taken away from them were not taking those vehicles home so they could report to a fire inspector.
Okay, you'll have more time to go into this than rebuttal. Let's hear from your adversary.
Good afternoon. I'm David Quinn. I represent the Public Employment Relations.
Counsel, do you agree that there was no personal use here?
Oh, no. There was personal use. That is the
economic. And did the town and the employee understand that there was personal use?
No question about it. This was.
What's your position on whether the town law was violated? The local law?
Well, I can answer that simply, that PERB has no jurisdiction to enforce the Code of Ethics for the town of Islip.
No, wait.
On this record.
That's not the question. No one's asking you to enforce the question is, can you order people to violate?
On this record, one thing is plainly clear, is that the 1968 local ordinance was never implemented.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Let's suppose that an absolutely clear law. Let's suppose it said in bright red letters, no cars for employees, a valid law, and it's ignored for 24 years. Can PERB order a town to keep ignoring it?
Yes. We have to.
What says that?
Here's the analogy that I'll give you. Because this is a mandatorily negotiable term and condition of employment, if the union had sat down with this employer.
Well, you're assuming that, right? In other words, you're assuming that.
I'm assuming that the economic benefit of using town-owned equipment is mandatorily negotiable.
You're saying the law was invalid the day it was passed?
No. I'm not saying that at all.
If it said you can't negotiate a mandatory
That would be yes.
Okay.
Yes, that would be
invalid. You are saying it's invalid.
Yes. That law would be invalid insofar as it barred the collective bargaining benefit.
This one invalid the day it was passed?
It was never implemented.
I didn't ask you that. Was it invalid the day it was passed?
Well, we have a disconnect.
Are you arguing, I think, what you're supposed to say, are you arguing that there's no way that the town could have interpreted that law as allowing for the kind of 80 people who had cars all that time? Or are you saying the law was clearly no good from day one and they just ignored it? What is your view as to what they did?
I was trying to respond to Judge's question.
Me.
But insofar as your question is concerned, this practice was not inconsistent from PERF's perspective with the local law. The 1968.
That's what I'm asking. Yeah.
Yeah. The 1968 ordinance didn't speak.
Didn't
speak of 24/7s or any of these other conditions that were put on in the 2008 ordinance.
What if it had been clearly inconsistent?
Well,
you're saying, well, no, our position is that that what they did was not inconsistent with the local law. What if it had been clearly inconsistent?
Now, that if it had been inconsistent with the local law, a legislative body has no right or duty to negotiate. It's only upon executive implementation of the legislative enactment that gives rise to a Taylor Law event.
So is it your position that local legislatures are without power to forbid the personal use of automobiles by employees?
A local legislature can pass any prohibition it wants. It's the implementation that gives rise to the refusal
Wait
to negotiate.
Wait a minute. You're saying they can pass anything they want, but they can't implement it?
If the local legislative body passes a law that says there shall be no collective bargaining in the town of Iceland, it would have no meaning.
That would be an invalid law.
It would have no meaning.
So what about a law that says there shall be no personal use of automobiles?
Is that an
invalid law, too?
That's Doyle, yes.
That is an invalid law.
Yes, but that's what Doyle
said. Even though at the time the law was passed, there was no established policy of giving personal vehicles. There's no evidence that there was at the time the law was
There's
passed.
There's no evidence in this record whatsoever about anything before.
So on day one, if they pass this law, you're saying they still have to negotiate it?
No. If they pass the law and nothing happens with respect to it,
well, on your theory, it doesn't matter what happens.
I guess my question is, does this mean that every successive administration in the town of Islip is stuck with these 80 vehicles? They can never correct the misuse of, say, some of these vehicles? Perhaps 25 or 30 of them should never have been given to the employees because the employees aren't satisfying any of the conditions of the statute or the administrative manual.
Well, the local law, which really what it boils down to is, can this practice be authorized? As a matter of fact, we consider
asking, can any successive administration ever change this practice? And I guess you're saying no, except through collective bargaining.
That's correct. However,
what's the principle of that?
Because the policies of the Taylor Law are that
regardless of what the local law says, whether they're complying with it or not, does it matter?
No. The local law doesn't trump the state law's duty to negotiate.
So your position is that no local law can regulate any term or condition of employment?
Not by resolution. It's the implementation. That is correct.
I don't understand that.
What do you mean? You mean you can resolve as long as you don't implement?
Yes.
That's nonsense. You can pass a law as long as you don't enforce it?
A legislative body with neither the right nor the duty to negotiate cannot refuse to negotiate.
If you're just saying the law is invalid, I understand that. I might have a problem in agreeing with it, but I understand it. But if you're saying it's valid, it just can't be enforced, that sounds to me like a contradiction in terms.
Well, I understand where the disconnect is. And it's the difference between the legislative body's role and the executive.
Yeah, but PERB said it was invalid.
If PERB said that the local law does not bar the bargaining
obligation. No, he said it's invalid.
Doyle it said it was invalid.
It says even if 1412 of the Ethics Code had any applicability, it could not serve as an authorization for the town's unilateral action because the local law is invalid to the extent that it precludes collective negotiations.
That is correct.
So they said it was invalid.
And citing Doyle for that proposition.
Oh, but they said it was invalid. You said, it's valid, they just can't enforce it. But the fact of the matter is that it's invalid,
right? It can't be, yes.
All right. And that's to get back to
I appreciate it. I would like to understand, too. So you're saying that the minute the law is enacted and the day it's implemented, if it's enacted today and implemented tomorrow, then it becomes a matter of negotiation.
Yes.
If it's enacted today and not implemented for years, it never becomes
A bargainable event.
But I thought it's the past practice principle that you were relying upon. So how does that apply if it's passed on Monday and Tuesday they implement it?
The past practice is established by the executive. The past practice in this case was established by consecutive town supervisors, department heads, human resources people.
I thought Judge Graffio's question was, if that practice had not existed, on your theory, the result would be the same because they still have to negotiate it.
Oh, if there was no past.
Isn't that what you're saying?
Yeah.
I guess the past practice doesn't matter here.
Because no, the
you're
past
saying
practice,
it's a term and condition of employment, so it's always a subject of collective bargaining. I'm just trying to understand yes. your posture.
There, at the bargaining table, if the union demanded to negotiate this subject, the town could not say, we have no Taylor law duty to negotiate this subject because we have a local ordinance.
Are you saying it doesn't matter whether the law is valid or invalid? It's basically, once they've implemented it, as Judge Graffia just said, it's a past practice issue. They've implemented, do we not have to look at the law? Is that what you're saying? It doesn't matter whether it was a violation of their own local law or the theory is that that's the way they interpreted that local law, and that's not a crazy interpretation. But you're not going along that route at all?
No, I would say both of those propositions are correct.
To find for you, we can look at that in either of those two ways?
I believe you can.
Can you also find that this applies to all members of the union? In other words, why just the 45? Shouldn't they supply vehicles to everybody in the union?
No. Why the not? Practice in this case was limited to specific people who received the benefit.
And how was it limited? How did you determine that it was limited? Based on 1412, which spelled out which ones get cars and which ones don't?
Well, no. The practice was the department head issued the car to the people based on whatever the department head's criteria were. And I must.
So does it go along with
I think
with
it
job?
Had to do with seniority, Your Honor.
Does it go along with job titles going forward? I guess that was my question, too, Mr. Quinn, is what is the remedy? Yeah. Here, that you want to, these cars have to be restored to everybody? Is that the?
Well, the remedy is, compliance is going to be an interesting issue in this case. I understand the cars have been sold. But the economic benefit can be restored in many different ways, and that would be a question of compliance. I would submit that the remedy would be not only either, it would be either give them the cars or give them the money that they would otherwise.
So what does the $3 that's deducted per day mean? What, if anything, does that go into that measurement of the remedy? Well, is that supposed to be the equivalent of what the value was, or do they have to say what it would cost to commute?
Standing here today, I'm not sure, but I would submit that the tax, that the if it were to be reduced to a compensation level, it would be the mileage, whatever the mileage would be.
Can I ask you decided
it's a mile or something,
right.
Whatever
PERB decided it was a past practice, correct?
That's correct.
Okay. So I'm a little confused how you reached that decision, given that they argue that this was a violation of the ethical code. So how could there ever be a reasonable expectation by these union members to continue this unethical practice?
Well, it's unethical only because the latest supervisor considered it to be unethical. Nobody else did. As a matter of fact, the previous supervisor put this subject on the table where it belongs.
So you're also arguing that this is a rational interpretation by the town itself of its own law. That's one of your arguments?
No, rational or irrational?
A rational, the original interpretation, letting them have these cars was their own interpretation of their own law, which was irrational, and they should be stuck with it. Is that your argument?
Thank you, Your Honor. That is precisely. They have interpreted their local law in a way that allowed the establishment of a past practice that is fully cognizable under the
code. How is that a defensible interpretation when it says that the only permissible use is for official business?
No, it's not the only permissible use.
I'm quoting the local law.
It says the car can be provided. Car cannot be provided for personal use or convenience or profit unless the car is provided for official use. This car was provided for official use.
You make the argument that it's personal. In fact, as Mr. Stolzer was pointing out, you make the argument that we're talking personal now. We're not talking about uses in the course of your employment. And you're the one that's saying you now have to give us cars for our personal use.
It was given for official use. At the end of the day, they were allowed to drive it home. They don't have these cars except
you're saying you can't get the car unless it's for official use, but once you have it, you can have personal use.
Precisely. Okay. Got the car. Now, by the way, the practice with respect to this personal use is extremely limited. There is no dispute that the only use, personal use, of this car, the economic benefit, was to drive from work to home, back to work.
So I couldn't make a detour and go and run my errands somewhere.
That's correct. You can't go.
No one ever did.
I don't know.
And you say
that's not in the record, Your Honor.
And that's not in violation of the town's law? I'm sorry. Perhaps I've lost the thread of your argument.
How you get the car is for official use. You can't, the car was not given to these employees for any other purpose except for official use.
Well, I'm sorry, isn't the use only to commute?
What? No. Oh, no. These people use the cars to do their official business during the day.
Where is that in the record?
That's in the record. That's undisputed.
So there's not a single person who got the car only for purposes of commuting.
But this is,
not on this record.
Counselor, this is not such an unusual situation.
No.
That government employees get cars for official use, and then they use it to get back and forth to work, and then they have to compensate for that use.
That's correct.
I mean, this is not nuclear science, a new thing in government. This is very, very common.
This is very common. The fact that I'm arguing this case before the Court of Appeals is, I believe, only because of this local law that barred the establishment, allegedly barred the establishment of the practice in the first instance.
Well, one of your people who testified seemed to be indicating that he had to go out and buy a car because of the change in the thing. Now, we're not going to reimburse him for the cost of the Volvo.
The compliance side of this proceeding, as I say, is going to be a different issue.
Why wouldn't it be just $3 a day?
Because that's the tax consequences. I don't know what the tax bracket is. I don't know, honestly. I don't know the answer to that. $3. Well, they came to an assessment that said the value of this car was, for tax purposes, is $3 for withholding.
Judge Reed and Judge Smith.
So let's say I'm one of the employees that has this car, okay, and I retire, all right, and somebody is hired into my same job title. Does the entitlement to the car automatically follow forever?
No.
Unless you negotiate something different?
No, actually, once you've retired, you're no longer an employee, so the terms and conditions of employment that are cognizable under the Taylor Law do not go with you.
So my successor doesn't necessarily get the same benefit I enjoyed.
Sorry. Your successor, who is an employee, when that employee becomes entitled to it, when the department head finds that you've had enough seniority, that you're entitled to use the car for your driving around town to do your official business, you can do it and then take it home at night. Somebody makes that determination based, as I understand it, Your Honor, I believe that this record establishes that it's based on seniority. How the employee gets the vehicle is, frankly, not very well fleshed out in this record.
Okay. So if they had instead of, as just said, we're not going to do this at all as a blanket prohibition, but instead had gone back and made an individual determination about each employee being able to get these cars, would that have been a violation?
Yes. Is the terms and conditions of employment attached to the employee, not the fact that it's one or two or six.
Did you have one more question?
No.
Okay. Thank you, counsel.
Thank you very much,
appreciate
Your Honor.
Counsel, you're on. Go ahead.
Good afternoon. May it please the court. My name is Liam Castro. I'm the attorney for the union.
How does your position differ from PERB, if at all?
It does not.
Okay, go ahead.
Is the law valid or invalid? What is their position? I had some trouble.
Our position is that the town's argument that the town law supersedes any bargaining obligations under the Taylor Law is wrong. They argue that...
I haven't heard whether it's valid or invalid yet.
Okay. To the extent that it violates the Taylor Law or imposes...
Okay, does it violate the Taylor Law or doesn't it?
I believe to the extent that it bars negotiating with the union, it is invalid under the Taylor Law.
Was it invalid in 1968, or did it just become invalid because of something? Somebody brought this up about 4 years later.
I mirror PERB's argument in that the implementation is important, not necessarily the passage of the statute, because that's a legislative act.
So it was not valid. Well, you mirror their argument that it's okay to pass it as long as they don't implement it.
Yes, because...
How does that make any sense?
Well, because...
How can it be okay to pass a law that no one can implement?
Because the law is something the legislature can do, pass a law. It is up to the executive officer here, the town supervisor,
to implement
that law.
When the legislature passes laws, isn't the executive supposed to execute them? Isn't that why they're called the executive?
Well, they're supposed to, and in this case, they didn't. However, to the extent that this practice here is relied upon, we think the practice is justifiable under the town law.
You're saying that again, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but your argument, as I asked PERB, is in part that it's their interpretation of the law and that was a reasonable interpretation, and letting whatever they did with these 80 people was consistent with the law, till a new administration came in and said, oh, I don't think it's consistent, or we want to save money, or whatever the...
Yeah, it was consistent.
So just so we're clear, though, so you're saying that these 45 cars that they said we can't afford anymore, we're going to take them off our insurance, we're getting rid of them and save money in the budget. They can't. They have to keep those cars.
I'm not going so far as to say that.
Okay.
The cars are still provided for official business. That's what the statute says.
They had 45 cars that they got rid of because they said we want to save money. And you're saying you can't do that. You've got to get our permission before you can.
You're saying you got to bargain. Is that your argument?
You got to bargain, but I'm not going so far as to say that.
Until a change is agreed on, they got to go buy those cars back.
Well,
supply them to you, right?
Well, I'm not going so far as to say that they can't get rid of the cars. If in fact they're saying the cars and something we're no longer going to provide to our employees, and
how could they do that? They have to negotiate. How could they just say?
Well, that changes the terms and conditions of employment, correct? Because if you're obligated to transport yourself from the town hall, let's assume that's...
Yeah, but if they don't have a car, how can they transport themselves?
Correct.
So you're saying they can't get rid of the car.
Right. Well,
they have to continue to give a car. It doesn't have to be that car, but then they don't save any money.
Well, it's clearly the town's obligation to transport the employee from location A to location B. Location A being, let's say, their report site, and location B, let's say, a house that they have to assess.
So could they institute a policy of pooling? Instead of having 80 cars, could they have 45 cars and make people pair up?
Well, we think that the PERB's determination here that the benefit was the permission for the employee to use the vehicle from their home to wherever their reporting location was an economic benefit. There's a value associated to that benefit.
But I think what Judge Abdusalam is asking you, and what's my question also, they can't do a pooling arrangement where people that have a need to use the car the next morning can take the pool car home? That they can't do that? Even that has to be bargained?
What has to be bargained is what...
No, can you answer my question? Is that... That has to be bargained. So they can't even try to save money by still providing the access, but instead of saying, you get car A, he gets car B, you can't do a pooling arrangement.
They must,
so that the employee still has the same access to a vehicle.
The employee must have the same access to the vehicle from the reporting location to home and back.
Is it the same access, or they just have to be compensated for taking away that access?
I'm sorry, Your Honor, I didn't catch
that. Is it the same access, or just that they have to be compensated for taking away that access?
We believe
if there's an economic benefit, yes. Is that what you're saying?
We're saying that the vehicle must be provided.
No, you're negotiating it, and you're saying...
Let me finish.
Yes. You're saying, give me another $100 a week, and you can have the car for the rest of its life.
Well,
it's a negotiation.
Nothing's taken in a vacuum, Your Honor, during negotiations.
I think Mr. Stolzer mentioned in his brief that if someone, God forbid, has been giving their administrative assistant every Friday off, and then decides, I really need him, every Friday. And is the union going to jump in? Wait a minute. You're just not going to make him come in and work 40 hours when you've been giving him, the Fridays off. No, we're going to have to negotiate that, right?
No, Your Honor, that is not this case here.
I know it's not. Yeah. But are we getting to that point where if there's an exercise of discretion on the part of government, that inures to the benefit of any employee, that they run the danger of that becoming a bargainable point?
No, not
running that danger.
No,
why isn't Judge Pigott's? Why isn't it a term and condition of employment that the administrative assistant only works 4 days a week? How can the employer change that unilaterally?
Well, that's a hypothetical, and there are a lot of variables
there.
We're going down a very slippery slope where we're going to start to maneuver around.
The reason we ask hypotheticals is we want to find out whether you think one result compels the other. How is the case that Judge Pigott put to you distinguishable from what you're asking us to do?
Well, it's distinguishable because in this case we have a local law that arguably allows for it. It does. It says personal convenience. Now I'm reading it in the river.
You think your case would be weaker if there were no local law here?
No, our case would be stronger. I don't think we'd be here if there were no local law.
But you then, like the local law.
I'm sorry?
You like the local law.
The local law is in our position, as we pointed out in our brief, is very consistent with the past practice. You can use it for personal convenience. so long as
you think it's ambiguous, the local law?
No, not
it's clear.
No, I don't
you think it's
it
clear
is.
In the way that you you.
Yes, Your Honor.
Can you finish that thought? It's you can use it for personal convenience. Finish it because
when a car is provided to you pursuant to municipal policy for the use of by that officer or employee in the conduct of official business, then you can use it for personal convenience.
Well, obviously, if you have it 24 hours a day, you can use it for personal convenience to get back and forth to work, right? That's the whole purpose of having the car.
Well, that's
you may have to pay them something back for your personal usage. That's what I was saying before to your colleague from PERB, that that's not uncommon,
that people
have the use of the car because of business, and then you pay for your personal usage.
Your Honor, that is not a new concept. We've cited in our brief the County of Nassau and several other cases, I think it's County of Onondaga or something, second and third department cases that very clearly said that the personal use of vehicles is a mandatory subject. This is not a new issue, Your Honor.
May I just...
Yes, sure, Judge Rivera.
So what is your argument for how your members have a reasonable expectation of for the continuation of what the town is arguing is violation of their town law?
Your Honor, I appreciate that. I understand that question. Yes. There are several reasonable bases for a reliance on the past practice. One is...
No, they can rely on it. That wasn't the question. The question is the reasonable expectation that
they
would
continue.
Yes.
Right. The reasonable expectation that it would continue was, one, the passage of time. This has been allowed to other employees in the same title who used the car for the same reason. Two, that those employees were taxed for that benefit, and we would be taxed as well. So those two reasons are remarkably important. In addition, this was open and notorious. These cars were provided to certain employees based on not only seniority but also title.
So probably upset a lot of people to know that there are certain favorites they're getting cars, wouldn't you think? You mentioned it's notorious. I mean, I just can't imagine what it does for employee morale to know that Ralph's going to go drive home in a car I'm paying for.
Well, then I would submit, Your Honor, that that employee should get to where that other employee is, become a senior, and get that title.
Mr. Quinn said you can't get them for everybody.
No, we agree. It's based on seniority. It's based on title. We're not saying we're not opening up the can of worms here that every town employee within this bargaining unit needs to now get cars.
Okay, Counsel.
Thank you, Your
Honor. We've got it. Thank you. Let's have rebuttal. Counsel, let me ask you one question. If you.
Okay.
If you accept the premise that that what you did in allowing these employees to have cars was a quite viable interpretation of the local law, assume that that's the case, and then you allow them to have the cars, and you have a past practice in terms of letting these people have cars, can you just unilaterally say we're going to discontinue the past practice? And if you can, on what basis is that okay?
In this particular case,
but assume that that what you did was a reasonable interpretation of your own law, and you did it many years past practice. Now you want to stop. Under what conditions can you stop? Well, why don't you have to negotiate?
First of all, not to be disrespectful, but I disagree with...
Again, this is a hypothetical.
Okay, but I disagree with the premise. I don't think we can have a premise here that it was proper at its inception.
But give me a little space and just agree with me for the time being that this was okay. It was a reasonable interpretation of your own law, and you let them do it. Then you want to stop, can you? If you accept that premise, which I know you disagree.
If I accept your premise, you're correct.
You cannot stop.
If you accept the chief's premise, you lose.
If I accept the chief's premise, which, not to be rude, but I don't accept. If we can just put this
in. No, we accept that premise. If everyone else has already conceded that premise cannot apply.
Well, I don't think everyone's conceded
Everyone has not conceded that?
Well, we do have
Excuse
to defer
me?
To we do have but, to defer to PERB, don't we, at a certain point?
Aren't there certain yes, aren't
you
certain
have to
findings?
Defer to PERB unless it's an issue of law. If I could just indulge me for a moment and put this in just a little bit of historical context. 1964, the general municipal law is passed. Chapter 18 says municipalities the state's decided we want you to pass ethics codes. It's permissive at that point. The town does it. They do what they're supposed to, actually, in that case. From there, in 1968, they adopt a code of ethics, including this 14-12. The vehicles are not given to employees, the record shows, until 18 to 20 years before the hearing, which was in 2006. So we're in the mid-80s. So for 20-plus years, there's no vehicles. I have some quibble with Mr. Quinn in that you can't have a violation until the executive branch implements something, because there was nothing to implement. What would they have done? They didn't give the.
So what happened that it was implemented?
Someone made a decision to give the cars. I don't go that far.
But that doesn't go back to the first question we asked you. I think Judge Smith asked it. Is what happened that the powers that be in the town ignored the law in allowing these personal cars, or was it that they looked at the law and said, oh, this is our interpretation of the law, let's give these guys cars?
I believe if you look at the law and its context, I believe they ignored the law.
So you believe they ignored the law. That's what we're asking.
And I think that's a reasonable assumption based on what that
says. Even though it was open and notorious, as was the law.
Which was open.
Even though the giving the cars was open and notorious, as the law was open and notorious. You still think they basically said, I don't know what this is about, or just didn't look and did what they did, in your view?
I think they did it incorrectly. I think they created this benefit that was illegal at its inception, which makes it improper.
On the question both the Chief and I have been asking, which is, did they ignore the law or did they just interpret the law? Did PERB decide that question? Has PERB ruled on that question?
In this particular case? No.
Okay.
PERB's holding's a little broader. Their holding really is any local law is overcome by the Taylor law.
I thought they were saying it's okay to ignore it, and indeed you've got to ignore it. Is that what you heard?
Yeah.
Well, thank you. Have a nice afternoon.
Okay. Thank you all. Appreciate it.